If you have an idea, go ahead and take a shot at it, because you have no idea what it'll turn into.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of American Desis. I'm feeling real gentle in my voice today. I'm feeling like this is warm jazz. Smooth jazz, sexy jazz. Anyways, whatever. This is American Desis. I'm Origin.
I'm Akash!
Oh, God. So aggressively unnecessary. Guys,
before
today,
the show, Origin was like, listen, guys, you gotta be quiet. The acoustics in this room are pa pa pa. I'm defiant in nature. You know what I mean? It's what I do.
Anyway, today we have on somebody I'm really excited about because, you know, as we announced earlier this year, I'm very honored to be now the brand ambassador for this amazing organization called Uplift Humanity India. And today we're blessed to have on our program today the founder, are you the CEO, just like the everyman, the guy in charge,
the
driver of the bus. His name is Anish Patel. He is graduating NYU in like 4 weeks. Probably by the time we air this, he will just have graduated.
Oh, no.
So this man is still in college and has accomplished more than I have. And I've been out of college for a little bit. Anish, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me on board here. It's an honor.
No, I mean, honestly, I think that it's it's so crazy when you, you know, when you reached out to me, this was like 7 months ago or about now, about the being a celebrity judge on of Humanity. I didn't really know much about what was going on. I didn't know this organization was existing. And the way that you presented yourself, the way you presented the organization, I was like, oh, this man's been doing this for like 12 years. He's like in like his
30s. I assume he was 35.
And at what point did you find out that I was in college?
I think real soon, because I like went to your website and then,
okay,
and it said you were in college.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is lying. Why are you lying? So let's like talk about how long has Uplift Humanity India been around? Like, when did it start?
So I started it when I was a sophomore back in high school. So in 2010.
Okay,
in
where
June
was
of
that?
2010.
Where was that? Where was high school?
New Jersey. In Basking Ridge is where I was brought up.
Basking Ridge?
Basking Ridge, New Jersey. It's a small town.
Didn't even know that was a place. All right, yeah. Cool. So you were in high school, your sophomore year, and you started. Now, how did it start? Because it started, the whole organization is taking volunteers out to India. So did you go start volunteering? Like, how did
this
start?
Yeah, so for the first few years, I was going every year on site with the kids. So it first started when my family's very, very passionate about going to India every year. I used to go once or twice a year, so I used to go every summer. And so I was going every summer since middle school, and then one summer in high school, I was like, if I'm going to be going every year, why not just do something that's impactful there? So the first year I was going there, I was just me by myself, and I was looking at the social sort of problems that were at play there as a sophomore. And what I realized, you know, from a high school lens was that there's a lot of social inequalities in India. But the one that I noticed was the most prevalent was, or the one that was most nascent, people didn't really know about, was that there are a lot of kids who are behind bars in India, or kids who are in orphanages. And the people don't really focus about kids who are behind bars. Because in India, there's a perception that if someone's committed some sort of crime or has been under the bars, you're a bad person. There's no need to provide them with instruction. So
there's almost like there's not even a point in rehabilitating.
Exactly.
Them.
I mean, people worry about India. But, I mean, there's a lot of nonprofits focused on women's rights. A lot of stuff on education for kids who are on the streets, about hygiene, about the water crisis. But I've never heard of someone saying, oh, let me go inside a jail and work with these kids who committed some sort of crime for some reason. And let me go ahead and try to fix these problems that these kids are having.
So let's go back just a little bit further in this timeline. Now, you to have the concept of service,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't, maybe it was just born within you, maybe. I would love to hear where that impulse originated from, if you can identify. Did you have models that taught you about service? Were you growing up where like either a school or your parents were saying, hey, you have to volunteer X amount of hours? Like, where did that come from?
I don't know about that one. So when I was in high school, I was a complete nerd. Okay. I would go to school, I'd come back, and I had like 10 hours of homework to do.
Okay.
So I guess I was looking for something to do that was really different.
Let me tell you something, buddy. If you start your own service organization at 16, I don't guess you're the jock of the school. Like,
yeah. I definitely wasn't.
Who the thunk?
For sure. So I was this kid who was just doing work all the time, but I used to go to India every year. So And when I was creating Uplift, when I was a sophomore, I had no idea I'd be a nonprofit at the time. For me, it was like, oh, let me just this summer take a few of my friends, about 15 of them, and take them to India.
Wow.
So with no idea that this would slowly transform into a fully functioning nonprofit.
How did you plan on funding that? What was the idea? This wasn't like I need to get into college. I'm applying to Princeton because I'm the kind of kid who starts an organization at 16.
Well, a lot of the kids who apply to the organization are doing it for those kinds of reasons.
Right.
And it's hard
but
for
we're
us
talking
to
about you at first, though. Like, when you started, it wasn't necessarily... This was something you just wanted to do for you.
This is something I wanted to do that just differentiated me and that made me who I was as a person at the time. Because when I was in high school, I was just doing work all the time. But I was be going to India, so and I could see everything that others weren't seeing, all my peers... friends in the U.S. that we're not seeing. So I want to kind of bring light to those sort of issues and connect those kids to India.
Let's talk a little bit about the community that you grew up in.
Yeah.
Was it Basking Ridge.
Yeah.
Was there a sizable South Asian population?
Not at all.
So there's none.
It's a very Caucasian-based based town.
Okay, interesting. And so you going to India, when you would go for the summers, how long would you go for?
I would go for about 2 or 3 weeks usually in the summer. I definitely go every winter, and I go in the summer for a week or two as well, or 2 or 3 weeks as well. Yeah, my dad and parents, like my mom and dad, are very super Indian, so
what
going to
mean?
India was very, very important.
I'm curious, how was that manifested in the home or in your day to day life outside of traveling? Was religious activities a big part of your day to day? Was it just like, listen, we're eating food? Like, how would that manifest for you?
I mean, you're talking about in New Jersey?
No, for you specifically in your home. You said your parents are super, like, Indian. So, like, what did that look like?
It wasn't too intense. Nothing too intense or oppressive at all. I mean, it was just the fact that they really believed in connecting me to my roots in India. So for my dad, it was super important for me to be going to India every year.
Right.
And just to be seeing my family, but also seeing his hometown as well. He never wanted me to lose that sort of root.
Isn't it interesting? Did you notice that when I started asking about what India looked like, the first thing was it wasn't super oppressive? There's a concept about that being raised Indian means that there's some oppression.
Of course.
But that was interesting because that wasn't at all what I was putting on the question.
Okay.
It was just an interesting... No, but it's an interesting thing. Just, you know, we can put the pin in that for later conversation.
Yeah.
It's just something I noticed that was interesting. All right, so you guys, your family really wanted you to go to India a lot. And so you would go every few weeks. Now, this first time that you wanted to do it, did you do it by yourself or the first time did you take these 15 friends?
So the first time was with 15 people. What I did was... There was one Indian teacher in my high school.
Okay.
And so I got her on board. I told her about, I pitched this idea to her. And she was like, this is really cool for me as an educator to be participating in, you know, working with kids who are behind bars. Because it's a space that a lot of people have not touched and have not even really thought about.
It's kind of a scary space.
Exactly. So for me as a sophomore kid who had signed up 15 kids... who had booked their flights to come abroad to India with me, I was terrified that, you know, what if this all is just not going to work out? You know,
how did that, logistically, how did that happen? How did you get funding for that? Did they pay out of their pockets? How did you find the juvenile center? Mm-hmm. Like, how did that all happen?
So to this day, the summer programs are fully funded by the applicant. So the volunteers pay a package that we offer, and that includes the airfare, the housing, the cost of all food. So we put out one fully functioning deal that covers everything that they were going to need.
And you did all this as a sophomore. You figured out what it would cost and
I mean, obviously it wasn't as precise as a sophomore.
Like, I'm fascinated by this particular aspect. How does a 16-year-old kid find a prison in India, talk to them, figure out what's going to cost, find housing.
You're only fascinated because it's really hard for you to respond to emails at the age that you are. So, like, I mean, you're talking about just somebody being really organized and really thinking through something and, like, being really... No, I mean, it's definitely...
Undertaking.
I wouldn't say I'm very organized, though. That's something I have to work on.
Okay. Sure. I think that's a relative term. I think that your skills at organization are probably higher than mine. But I want to ask about... it is a good point. How did you find the center in India that you wanted to work? Was that in your father's hometown or your mother's hometown?
So it's in the state of Gujarat, which is where my parents are both from. And I would always be in the city in Gujarat.
I mean, this is called... a Patel we're talking to.
Yeah, exactly.
Anybody who's confused.
You're Punjabi. What are you?
I'm not Punjabi.
You're
my
not?
My last name is Singh, but I'm not Punjabi. I'm from UP.
Uttar Pradesh.
Oh, okay.
Rajas, we were the first Singhs. And then Punjabis came in six and like they just took our swag and it's like they made it a little cooler, I guess, but like whatever. You know what I mean? We were first.
I'm from Uttar Pradesh in Haryana.
Oh, from the Delhi area. No.
No, a few hours outside of Delhi. Okay. I mean, Delhi became its own thing. But yeah, my mom's from Uttar Pradesh, that area near Lucknow. Kanpur is the city.
Awesome. So basically I was in Gujarat. I mean, both my parents are from Gujarat. And I was always in the city of Baroda, is where I always spend my time when I'm in India. And there was always this one facility that would come across. And it was this gated, rustic building, a very, very run down. And that was a building that I kind of realized where I found out was where the kids who were the behind bars in the state of Gujarat were. So that's kind of where my first step was.
It's a statewide. It's not like a city locale.
No. So it's a citywide, but it's for a particular region of the state is where those kids went there.
Okay.
And now we work in different areas in Gujarat. But that was the first center, and that was the one that was, you know, the one that I was most familiar with, which I used to always go down when I was going down the
streets. Now, I've done a little bit of work in India, and getting things done in India is a challenge.
Oh my God, yes.
Getting things done in India when you're abroad is even more of a challenge.
Yes.
Was that, how long did, from the inception of the idea to the first time that you took these 15 people, how long was that?
Between the idea and the actual trip, one year.
So it took a full year.
Yeah, so it was the idea behind Up of Humanity was created when I was in India itself.
Oh, okay, cool.
And then when I came back, I came to that teacher and I said, hey, I had this idea. Can you kind of be the chaperone?
Awesome.
And then we started emailing out schools and guidance counselors in schools saying, hey, there's this trip going on if anyone wants to join. And it was very, very unofficial at the time. And I somehow rallied 15 kids to come. A lot of it was through word of mouth, obviously, but I was very surprised at the first.
What was the makeup of these 15 kids?
So before...
Ethnic, I'm talking like, were they all Indian?
Yeah, they were all Indian. Because at the time, we only accepted Indians to volunteer with us.
Okay. And so, but you said that you didn't have a very big Indian population. So where did these kids come from?
Family, friends, cousins. I mean, a lot of word of mouth. And then we also reached out to, I mean, I'm from New Jersey, which is where Browntown Central is. So I basically reached out to schools that I knew would have a lot of Indian population. So just J.P. Stevens and, you know, South Brunswick High School, a lot of schools in that area where I knew there's a lot of highly densely Indian populations.
Right.
We kind of strategized it that way and reached out to these schools and kind of somehow was able to get 15 kids to come on this mysterious trip to India.
So how did, and this teacher, I'm oddly fascinated, what did this teacher teach?
She taught biology for freshmen.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So you guys went out there and you did it the first year. What was that experience?
It was amazing. So, I mean, I was terrified. So basically the day before the kids were coming, I was already in India setting stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was terrified because I was like, you know what? What if these kids walk in and these juveniles are just like, you know, screw off. Like, you know, mm-hmm. don't. Why do you think that you as Americans can come in this facility and tell us what to do or tell us what to learn or just talk to us? You know, who are you to tell us anything at all? And that was my biggest worry, that for the next 15 days, this sort of system that I had imagined was not going to work out. Mm-hmm. And that it was just some sort of visionary idea that could happen, but it really wasn't going to.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the scariest part for me because I had, you know, made these kids pay for food, housing. I had paid an advisor, paid for airfare. Right. And what if we were just here for 15 days doing nothing at all?
Right.
So the first day we go in, and that was exactly what happened. The kids were just laughing. They were actually laughing at us. Because we weren't able to, you know, speak that well the language, really communicate that effectively. And for them, we were just foreign people who were just clowns. They just didn't really care to learn. They weren't excited. Usually when you go to India and your cousins are like, oh, wow, my cousins from America are coming.
Right.
And they're excited to see you.
Right.
But with this sort of population, they've gone through so much that they're not looking to actually, at the beginning, they're not looking to actually learn anything from you, especially when you're that foreign, you're just coming here for a few days.
Yeah.
Right. So the first few days, and every year this happens now, you know, the first 2 days is the worst because everyone, they're just rejecting us. And it's very hard for our volunteers to keep going back, especially because our volunteers are teenagers as well. So for them, after a while, they're like, oh, wait, this is getting kind of annoying.
Right.
How old are these kids that they're working with? What is the age range?
Between the ages of 10 and 18.
Okay, so actually contemporary, like their peers.
Yeah, that's the concept that I created, that it'd be more effective to teach these kids by your own peers. It's peer-to-peer learning.
Interesting.
Sort of experience. Yeah. It was a different way of actually targeting this population was if I'd have these American kids teach these Indian kids, they might learn something in a different way through a different form and fashion. So, but anyway, so after the third day, kids started to learn, and throughout the next 14 days, these kids develop such great bonds. At the last day, these orphans and juveniles and our volunteers, our advisors, I mean, the last day, everyone is bawling, crying that we're leaving. Mm-hmm. The volunteers are crying that they're leaving these kids for one more year. And the juveniles and orphans are crying because they've experienced so much love and support and education and instruction and attachment for the past 2 weeks or 3 weeks that they never experienced before, and that they know that these kids are going to be leaving and they're going to be put in these facilities for one more year without any sort of contact from us.
So, well, let's talk a little bit about the instruction that you're giving. What is the goal for these 2 weeks? What are you trying to impart?
So do you know what recidivism is?
Yeah, so that they come back and they get stuck in the cycle, right?
Essentially. So the recidivism is the rate at which a person commits a crime, goes and gets sentenced to a sentence, gets released, commits another crime, and goes right back in. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to break that cycle of recidivism through cross-cultural education. So what we realize is that at the beginning, teaching English, reading, writing, and teaching math was not what these kids needed because they're not going to apply these skills at all. Mm-hmm. Which is what other nonprofits teach the kids who are underprivileged because that's what they need at the time.
Right.
But we realized that before we even teach these juveniles and orphans these skills, what they need is skills like anger management, how to deal with peer pressure, how to become better people, how to make the right friends, how to develop better self-esteem.
Right.
Because what we realize is that when these kids are out on the streets, the fact they have low self-esteem and that they conform to peer pressure is why they commit another crime and then they go right back in. Mm-hmm. So our understanding was, let's make them better people through teaching them these sort of core set of values. And once they've done that, now we've begun implementing skills like computer literacy. We're doing it at laptops and computers. We begin teaching English, reading, writing, math. And now we're providing vocational training. So we have architects come in, or construction individuals, or beauty parlors come in to teach the girls. So that they can, when they're released, they don't go on the streets. They get right connected to a facility where they can go for higher instruction.
Two questions. One, how did you come to that conclusion? And two, is 15 days enough time to build up somebody's self-esteem?
So what was the first question?
How did you come to those conclusions? This is the problem.
Like, how did you come to the conclusion about, like, what
the self-esteem is the problem? What peer pressure is the problem?
I think what we realize when you diagnose the state of mind of these kids is that they're not bad people. You know, when you're 7 years old and your parents leave you and you're on the streets of India without any sort of guidance from an individual or mentorship, and you're on the streets and you are just, you know, you're immersed within this group of other individuals who peer pressure you or bully you to do something, you realize that these kids aren't bad people. They're not committing these crimes because they're bad people, but it's because they're put in these situations, in these environments.
But did you know that going in the first year? Or did you find that out after the first year when you talked to them and whatever?
Well, so the 1 year we took between the idea and the actual execution, we developed that curriculum. And we did a lot of research understanding the juvenile state of mind and what kind of reasons these kids who are behind bars commit
crimes. What kind of mentorship did you have during that year? Like, was this all on you and the teacher that you were working with? Or did you reach out to other, like, juvenile centers in the States? Did you look out? Like, what was your sort of process?
So it was me, the teacher, and then I had a few of my friends who I had basically, you know, said to come on board and help us out with this new sort of startup nonprofit that I was creating. And for a lot of these high school kids, it was like, oh, this is exciting. This is new. Right. This isn't something that's ordinary. Let me try to go ahead and take a stab at it. So it was a bunch of kids. I mean, and when Upla first started, there wasn't any adults. It was that one advisor that's an adult and a bunch of kids that were running it.
Which was really weird. That's something to underline. It's just how beautiful that is. That, like, y'all took it on yourself. Not only was it peer-to-peer, but it was completely peer, like, run by you guys. That's really great, man. Congratulations. That in and of itself
It's a tricky mix because for me, I was like, oh, this is really cool. People will support it because it's all by kids. But then it was also like, wait, will anyone take us seriously?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is one of the major concerns I still face to this day. Because when you asked earlier about working in India, and working in India when you're not in India, for someone who's 22 years old and looks like a 7-year-old, there's going to be like, what are you? And who are you to talk to me about what to do with these kids?
Right.
And that's a struggle we face every day, especially when the face of the organization is someone who's still in college.
Right.
Only for a few more weeks.
Unfortunately, yeah, I know. I want to do like, I could do 4 more years of college, really.
Oh, God. Okay, so you guys are doing this in Chicago. And then the second question, which is an important question, was, is 15 days enough?
So basically, we realized after 3 years of Uplift, we realized that going there for 15 days and leaving them was actually more detrimental to us.
That's my thought.
Because you give them all the support and what they ought to deserve, and they realize, and we teach them, hey, this is what you deserve, this is what you need, this is what you, you know, this is your potential. And after we leave, they're so sad, and they go right back to the instruction of these facilities, with these government facilities that are, you know, underfunded and don't receive any instruction. And it kind of, it obviously made it even worse, because it made these kids realize what they don't have. So we left them. And so about a year ago or 2 years ago, we started Uplift Humanities Academic Program, where throughout the entire year, now we have local volunteers coming in our local facilities to teach and making sure that our presence is there throughout the entire year.
Because I know big brothers, if you take on a little brother, you have to be with him for a year.
Right.
That's like
right.
1 year commitment.
Right.
Yeah. So I was thinking, you know, that's, that's how.
So these local volunteers, how is that just something that built over time organically because you've been there and people are starting to understand, people are starting to recognize Uplift Humanity? I mean, because listen, sidetrack question. How many times do you go back and you see the same kids?
Several.
So you're so they're starting to see, they're just like starting to build in. It's like the first week is that they're there. My understanding of working with the kids, and I've worked with some, and I work with the homeless youth a fair amount, the first few times is like, they don't believe you're going to come back.
Yeah, so
they
of course.
Don't
trust issues.
They don't trust that you really, because they've just been abandoned. So it's like, man, you ain't coming back. I don't trust you. So the first few days of it is like, oh shit, they're really back. Okay, I can pay attention. Right? Same thing happens year by year. So is that what allowing you to get local volunteers? Is that what's allowing the community in India to start getting involved?
I think what got us to be more involved throughout the entire was realizing that we have the resources now to be able to make an impact throughout the entire year A. But B, that more and more important is that what these kids need is instruction and help throughout the entire year. By just going there for 18 days and leaving, it wasn't really making an impact the way that we wanted it to or that we envisioned it to. And we realized that if we're going to teach these core curriculums for 18 days throughout the entire year, there should be someone and a group of people that are going in throughout the entire year to reinforce those skills and hone those skills. And then from that sort of idea, we realized, wait, why don't we make sure that these kids get employed? And why don't we make sure that these kids are following their passions? And if there's a girl who wants to be a beautician, we'll connect her with a beautician who can, you know, mentor her for a few weeks.
Right.
And if she's the right fit, that beautician can hire her privately. And those are the kind of new programs and new products and services we begin to offer as we
Have you been getting pushback from the government? Since these are government-run facilities, has there been obstacles from that side of things?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's working in India is a huge challenge, and you'd think for the nonprofits they'd be welcoming you because it's free education and free stuff. But it's always hard working in certain cities in India with local governments. I mean, with national governments, we got a lot of support. We met the Prime Minister of India, Modi, 3 years ago, which was amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, and he gave us a lot of support. So nationalized.
So that's when he was Chief Minister of Gujarat.
That was when he was Chief Minister of Gujarat. So we met him in Gujarat, and he was campaigning to be Prime Minister at the time. It was about 2 months before he actually swore into office. And then local governments is always very, very challenging because they have these sort of passions and sort of expectations of what they should be deserving out of our nonprofits as well. And so there's always conflicts. And as an American organization, we can't offer that, obviously. But very challenging to work in India with nonprofits, especially with these local sort of corrupt officials.
Let's fast forward to now. And let's talk about what is Uplift Humanity at this moment. What is it offering to volunteers that may be listening, that may be interested? What is it that these kids get?
Our volunteers.
Yeah.
So what we provide to our volunteers is an experience that most, I mean, what we're allowing our volunteers to do is to travel 8,000 miles away without your parents, with a fun group of kids. And these kids get to volunteer for about 18 days. I mean, they get volunteer hours, which is, you know, one thing you can put on your resume or whatever. But what you learn from this experience working with kids who are behind bars is completely different because you realize, you go in thinking, oh, I'm going to be working with bad kids. But you realize that you're going to work with kids who are really great, but who made a few poor decisions because of the group that they were placed in.
Right.
And coming back is just, and that's what you come back with. You come back with a whole new understanding of human psychology and about what life is like for people who were born in India and who were somehow abandoned. And it's about the birth lottery. The fact that these kids were born in America and that these kids were born in India, which was one big difference between those two.
Huh, birth lottery.
Yeah.
That's an interesting phrase. Is that a common phrase in the nonprofit world, or is that just like something that you guys have come up with as you guys are?
I actually just made it up right now.
Hey. I really like that.
That's yeah, it's cool. It's a birth lottery. It's, you know, you never know where you're going to be born. But if you're born in that area, you know, if you're born in America, you hit the lottery.
Well, it just cuts it like advantages and privileges that we have. And, exactly. And again, having awareness of that. And, you know, we were just talking about this the other day on our, you know, in our last community episode about my experience, because I lived in India for a year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I lived in India for a year when I was 11. And the experience that I had and the way that, like, witnessing the totality of life, because you can't go to India and not experience just, right, like, you're what in it, everyone... Of it. Yeah, you're in it. All of it. And how aware of my own privilege that made me. Mm-hmm. I wasn't aware of those terms when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But, like, there was something that shifted that allowed me to, like, look at the world in a very different way. How do you choosing your applicants? Now, you guys are increasing. You're getting more. I think there was, like... How many... You had, like... It was a crazy number of applicants last year.
Often, we had well over 100 applicants this year, and which was amazing for us because it really showed that somehow our word is being spread and kids, not only in the Tri-State area, but now we're getting, you know, and we're getting people from like not just LA areas and, you know, LA and Orlando, but we're getting people from like Kentucky and, you know, states where we wouldn't think to focus our marketing on.
Right.
Which is amazing because it really shows that somehow through word of mouth or through our commercials or social media or through the celebrities that we're partnering up with, somehow our word is being spread. And that's the most amazing thing for me to know, that people are actually caring about the organization or are actually applying.
So what are you looking for in these? I mean, you obviously, I guess the dream would be able to take everyone.
Yeah.
But that's not possible at this moment.
Well, we're trying to get as many kids. So what we're looking for an application is someone who has a passion to volunteer. And for us, it's not about the smartest kid. It's about the kid who's the most outgoing personality, who can work with someone who's so quiet and who's so neglected and can somehow be able to talk to that person and get him to say a few words. Because somehow the smartest kids are not the kids who are the most outgoing, obviously. So it's really about through these essays that we make them write, understanding their point of view, their school of thought, and their motivation as to why they're applying to us. And that's really what we care about the most in each application.
Do you do interviews or anything like that? Just essays?
For some kids that we're unsure about, we do interviews. We get them a quick pop call, and we just ask them a few questions just to see what they're like.
How involved are you at this point in time?
Yeah.
How involved? I know you have a team around you at this point.
Yeah.
Are a lot of them from, you're at NYU, or a lot of them from NYU?
So now we're focusing on hiring a lot of individuals who are much mature than us, having individuals who are much more experienced than us. Old. Obviously love having
college kids. You got old folks working for you.
What's up?
You got old folks working for you.
Of course. Now, yeah, when I first started, it was just me and kids, but now we have a large group of individuals who are much older than I am,
right,
who are helping us. With different aspects, whether it be marketing or finance, fundraising,
right,
strategy expansion.
Is that interesting, being the leader of?
Of course.
I've got to imagine that brings its own obstacles to the play.
It's cool. It's cool because I mean, we're at the end of the day, we're all working. We're trying to hire the people that are looking to expand the cause and have the best interest for the cause. So if we're all aligned with our principles and are all going towards a common goal. Obviously you have conflicts, but really it's about whoever has the best idea, and it's not about me or that person. It's just about whoever has the best idea can move forward. I mean, we all have the same common interests. So.
No, I mean, that lack of ego is really beautiful. I mean,
that lack of ego.
No, and it's necessary because, okay, so you're looking at these applicants, you're looking for, you would like to take as many as you can and outgoing. How much training are these kids getting before they go into these communities?
Yeah, so these kids basically we give them, so when they're in a, so next Sunday in New Jersey we're having our orientation.
So next Sunday would be
April 24th to 25th.
Yeah. Beautiful.
So these are the kids. So all the kids who were accepted to our summer programs will be coming to this venue that we've rented in New Jersey, and we're gonna have a presentation where we tell them all about the trip, what they've signed up for. But they don't really receive any sort of actual instruction during that orientation. They just get to meet the advisors, get to meet all the directors at Upload Humanity. And then when they get on site in India, they land on a Thursday.
Okay.
So that Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we give them a 3-day instruction where they understand how to deal with, you know, kids who are behind bars. What kind of questions you can ask. What questions you can't ask. Right. You know, how to basically be a teacher. Because these kids are high school and college kids. They don't really know what it means to be an instructor or to be a peer mentor. So we provide them with the skills. We have advisors on staff in each of our sites in India who tell them, hey, these are the kids that we're working with. This is how you go ahead and teach self-esteem. This is how you teach how to be a better person or how to deal with anger management. They get 2 to 3 short days, and after that, they're fully equipped. And it's more about the personal experience. It's more about the mentorship. So there's no sort of strict rule book. There's just a few rules, hard rules. But after that, it's about how your personality is able to communicate with your particular student.
Is it possible for these volunteers, once they've left, to stay in touch with the kids or be still, or is it then next year are you having a lot of people that are trying to go back several times?
So what's amazing now is we've started donating laptops and computer technology, and a lot of, because we've been implementing these technology literacy programs, these kids who are behind bars in India and these kids who are in orphanages are now developing Facebook accounts and social media sites, and they're able to interact with their volunteers in the U.S.
That's great.
And that's really cool for me because I'm like, wow, somehow we're able to now connect our volunteers in the U.S. with kids who are behind bars who at one point 5 years ago had no sort of interaction with people. Forget about in America, but outside of those bars.
Yeah.
And now they're using Facebook and leveraging social media, which is amazing. And it's really cool. And they like our Facebook page. They interact with us on social media, which is awesome.
Right. Let me ask you this. How have you changed since you started this?
I think as I interact with more and more of the juveniles, I've learned to become so much more open-minded and learned about people's, you know, everyone has a different story to tell, and that's it's so much so for these kids who are behind bars, because every one of them has a sad story. No one chose to steal or to commit a crime or to do something on purpose. It's because they were interacted and dealt with and put in that situation. And so for me,
an interesting point, because a lot of people in the States, I think that a lot of people think crime, and maybe this is a worldwide thing, but I'm just using the States because this is where I hear it most. You know, they blame the criminal. It's interesting. You're taking a lot of blame off of these individuals.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting. Was that always a mentality, or was that something that you learned?
No. Because when I was going into Uplift, I was thinking, oh, let me just make these better kids and get them released so they don't go right back in. Mm-hmm. Now it's more about, oh, let us first understand why they become like this and understand how to fix that problem from the root. It's a different way of looking at it. I think we're every year we have a whole committee in New Jersey and in New York of directors and teachers who develop our curriculums and update them every year. And every year we learn from our mistakes about what an instruction is lacking, and we get newer curriculums. And so we're making it stricter and stricter and tighter to make it the most effective curriculum we can teach.
What's your vision with this organization, with this idea? What is it? Is it
to try to get aware? So number one is to spread awareness. So many people right now don't know the situation in India. I mean, they don't really focus on kids who have committed crimes. It is a smaller population, but when you look at how many kids it totals up to, it's a very large population of people in India who don't receive any sort of instruction at all. My vision is to A, spread awareness, but B, also connect these American kids to volunteer in India, come back to their home roots, volunteer, get an understanding of what's going on in their hometowns, and bring as many kids as possible. So this past year, we actually launched Mumbai.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And with Mumbai, what we realized is we're getting a lot of requests from kids who are not Indian to volunteer with us, because they're like, wait, volunteering in jails in India? I want to do it. But before we had, our curriculum was designed that you can only teach it if you speak the local language. So if you were going to Gujarat, you got to speak Gujarati. If it was Mumbai, it was Hindi, or Delhi Hindi, Hyderabad Telugu. And we're getting these individuals who want to volunteer. We're saying, wait, we're wasting a lot of volunteer capital. A lot of people who want to volunteer with us who can't. So we realized that we need to innovate immediately. So this past year, we started designing a whole new curriculum. We launched Mumbai and said, if you're American, if you're speak any language you want to, come, or if you can speak English, essentially, you can volunteer with Uplift Humanity now and go to Mumbai.
Wow.
So now we open up our doors to any high school or college kid, whether you're Indian or not, can now volunteer with us in either one of our locations, especially Mumbai if it's for...
Do you worry about any sort of, with non-South Asians that come and integrate, any sort of cultural sensitivity or any sort of cultural training that may be required before they walk into that space? Because if you've never been to India before... And then all of a sudden you plop. And I've been on trips with people, and I worked with people who I thought were highly evolved individuals. And when they got to India for the first time, the prejudice and the fear and the amount of ignorance and lack of evolution that would come out of their mouths was quite stunning.
Yeah.
And that's always something. Is that something that you guys are concerned about at all or prepared for, or what's the...
So because we're working with these high school and college kids, we make it sure that these kids are with us at all times. So whether it's a huge liability for us to be taking these 100 kids to volunteer abroad. So we try to make sure that everything is all inclusive in the way that these kids are with us at all times. Mm-hmm. And if they're interacting with anyone outside, the advisors are always there. Mm-hmm. So in terms of those sort of conflicts, those are all, you know, taken care of by our entire team. But the conflicts in terms of when they go to India and they get a huge cultural shock about, wait, what kind of place is this? That, I think, is something that everyone knows and is expecting.
So that's kind of built into the...
It's kind of built into the experience. They know what they're signing up for when they say, I'm going to go to India and to a rural city.
Right, I guess the people that are intrinsically and desiring to volunteer.
Exactly. That makes sense. Because if you're culturally myopic, you're probably not going to be volunteering and wanting to go to India in the first place.
That makes a lot of sense. We have to wrap up in a couple minutes, so I want to ask, are there things that people should know about Uplift, like where it can be found? Are there deadlines coming up for applications? What can we point our listeners to? Right.
So if you thought this chat was interesting, you can go to www.uplifthumanityindia.org. It's our website. You can check out our Facebook and Instagram page as well. Applications for our next year's programs for summer 2017 will be open in August of this year. And we'll start accepting applications in August, starting all the way for the next following summer. For this summer, we're all fully booked. Everything's set to go, so... just for the next summer. And then if you want to volunteer locally, send us an email, go onto our website and just fill out our forms. And
also, people can get involved in Uplift even while they're in the States.
Yeah, of course. While we have a lot of adults working for us, we have a lot of students who are interning with us, learning about how to market nonprofits, how to raise funds, how to work with finance and accounting. So we're always trying to develop students professionally in the nonprofit space. And then a lot of kids here who are working to increase our impact here in India, and they always are reaching out, looking to create a better curriculum. So there's always a way for a kid to volunteer with us here in the U.S.
Anything you want to say just in general in closing?
If you have an idea, you should go ahead and implement it, because you never know what can it. I mean, when I was creating Uplift when I was a sophomore, I had no idea that A, it'd be a nonprofit, but B, that I'd be doing it for the next, you know, 6 years so far that I've been doing it. So if you have an idea, go ahead and take a shot at it, because you have no idea what it'll turn into.
Beautiful.
That's a beautiful way to close. I just want to thank you again. I'm thrilled to be a part of this organization in the small way that I am.
We're so excited to have you. This is the first time I've seen Urgent, by the way. So really? We're so thrilled to have him.
I'm thrilled to be able to do my small part in trying to spread the word and spread the word about the good work that you guys are doing. I'm going to India in December, and I'm going to definitely stop by in a couple of your facilities.
I want to
check out the work you guys are doing. Guys, go to Uplift Humanity India, Google it, find their Facebook page, find their Instagram page to check out dope photos of some of the volunteers and some of the stuff. Always a fun little look at right there. And reach out to them and get involved in whatever way you can. We're going to come back at you next week with another dope episode with a dope guest. It's time for you to...
I'm not going to tell you to review the podcast and rate the podcast. I'm going to tell you to direct your energies this week to Uplift Humanity India.
Beautiful.
Go do that.
But if you want to do anything for us, it would be... What did we say it was on the call yesterday? Something about Audio Boom? Oh, shoot.
We're really bad at marketing.
Oh, my God, guys. This is embarrassing. We had a phone call about it.
Comment on our Facebook posts. Share the Facebook posts. Rush. Comment on our Audio Boom page. Do something with your life.
No, but real talk, especially on this one, if this is something that's cool, if you feel like you know somebody or know like kids that might be interested or a family might be interested, this is a great podcast to just like share directly to your folks on Facebook that might be interested to get them checked out. You know what it is. We love you. I'm Arjun.
I'm Akash.
We'll catch you in a couple days.
God bless.